Hello and welcome to another episode of the Triumphant Life Podcast. I am your host, Nicholas Trevelyan, and I am so honored to introduce you to today's guest and today's episode. Today we have on Mr. Kyrie Harper. Kyrie is an entrepreneur. He's a self-made man. But the thing that makes Kyrie so special and so unique is Kyrie is a very proud Black man that was put into the foster care system. And Kyrie was adopted by a white family when he was 10 years old. So Kyrie has faced so much adversity in his life. He was on his own at age 16, and he's had to fight through adversity and triumph over the curveballs and the adversity that the world has thrown him. He is the true definition of the triumphant life, his ability to push forward when life has thrown him a curveball and continue with his faith to chase his dreams and accomplish his long-term goals. Like I said, I am so honored to have him on. Now, Kyrie, being a proud Black man and a white family, has such experience and a passion for the Black Lives Movement. He's going to dive into some insights there and give you guys his perspective on the world, the current changes and things we are going through as a nation, and also his experience being an entrepreneur. And I just know there's so much you can learn on so many levels from today's episode. So I really hope you guys enjoy it. If you do, reach out to Kyrie and shoot him a message. Let him know what you thought about this episode and just give him some love. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the Triumph Life Podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Trevelyan. I'm so freaking pumped for this to have Kyrie Harper with me. Kyrie, what's up, my brother?
How's it going, my man?
Dude, this is going to be a lot. So hey, if you're listening to us as you're driving on the treadmill, wherever, really grab a notepad, grab some pens. So Kyrie's an entrepreneur. He is a marketer. He is in real estate. He's just a bad dude, just crushing. Kyrie and I were actually connected on a website. He runs Facebook ads for people. He's really ahead of the curve with stuff, and I was so excited to bring him on. But that's not what started him on. Actually, what started him coming on the episode and today's podcast is a post that I made on Facebook. You know, as we're going through this time in the world right now, it's a time of change, a time of fear, a time of chaos, a time of adversity, a time of what do you want to be known for? You know, we're coming out of the COVID craziness, and now we have the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, with the death of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd. Let me rephrase that. You know, you have the Black Lives Matter debate, you have the All Lives Matter, you have the Blue Lives Matter, and all this chaos. I put a post on Facebook, and it was a post of really be willing to risk everything if you stand for something. And it was a picture of Colin Kaepernick. For those that don't know who Colin Kaepernick is, he was the first NFL player to take a knee during the national anthem. Very, very, very controversial post. And right now, your blood is probably boiling. And right now, you listening to me, and Kyrie's going to get into this as well. Whenever you hear something like that, so controversial, you automatically have an opinion on it. And you're going to draw a line in the sand right now. Here's what I would challenge you to do as you're listening to today's episode. Listen and hear what Kyrie has to say and hear his opinion and get his side of things, because we are all allowed our opinion. And that's what started the post. I put up this picture of Colin Kaepernick, and it said, be willing to risk everything if you stand for something. And I said one very, very simple sentence. I said, I finally understand, period. And I said, I finally understand why and where he was coming from. And that started a beautiful conversation with me and Kyrie. And we're going to get into achievement, entrepreneurship, marketing, all that fun stuff. But Kyrie reached out and he was like, hey man, I saw your post. And that's where I want to pick up, man. Let's just start about on that conversation right now, bud.
All right, cool. Yeah. So basically, when I saw your post, you know, as we were talking before, I was it triggered me, and you know, and not in the right way, you know. But I base my life off thinking logically rather than emotion. So sure. I was like, so in the most blatant way I could say this, I was like, oh, here we go, another white person that just wants attention off the Black man's back. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought. And, you know, I was like, you know what? Let me not cast judgment upon someone. I've never even had a real conversation with like that.
Yeah.
So instead, I decided to give my input as to, you know, let me understand Nick. Because this, okay, so Nick understands why Colin Kaepernick and the Black community supported him in this protest. So let me try to understand why Nick thought it was about the flag to begin with, rather than the consistent centuries of Black oppression. or just oppression amongst minorities in general, you know, even including white people, you know, lower class white people, sure. because I see the way they're treated as well, you know? So I was like, you know what? Let's talk about it. Let me ask Nick a couple of difficult questions on that post. Let's see how he really feels. Or was this post just for show?
And so you're speaking. So we had never met prior to this. And when I read his post, it automatically triggered me because I think so many people just don't give a crap and they want the social media angle. Maybe you've seen that video of the girl out in LA holding up a fake, you know, a drill, faking like she's helping to get the photo for the gram. The analogy I always use is it's the person in line at Starbucks in their $50,000 SUV who already can afford a $9 mocha frappuccino. And to make themselves feel good, they buy the person behind them coffee who is also in a $50,000 SUV who, you know, dude, I've lived on Folgers my whole life, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're just trying to do that for the gram and make yourself feel good, you've made no change. Or it's the person that goes down and feeds a homeless person just for the selfie. How do you think that that man or that woman feels? You putting them in a selfie, using their situation to make yourself elevate, right? And so that's why I did post that, because I knew that it was going to shake up some people on, you know, on my social media profiles. I knew it was, because I wanted to do more than just a post and really stand for something. Hence why I was like, dude, let's hop on the podcast and let me give you a voice. Because the thing is, whenever something like this happens, right, I believe in it so, so, so much. I didn't know how to respond, dude. And so I prayed and I just thought for a few days, what is my role in this? Well, I know here on the podcast, I have a platform. I have a voice. We have a lot of listeners. And I was like, you know what, dude? And that's right when I responded. I said, why don't you hop on and let's have a conversation about this so I can stand with you and give you a voice so it's more than just some 30-second, 60-second self-serving post.
Absolutely. Well, and I definitely, once again, I do appreciate that you even followed up on that, because you could have easily said that in your comments and then turned the other way once I sent you that message, you know? Yeah. You know, so honestly, I definitely appreciate that.
Talking cheap, dude.
It is. And a lot of people during this time have been talking, but just the same amount of people have been silent as well.
Absolutely. And that's the same as standing for nothing. Stand for something or stand for nothing, man.
I'm seeing it a lot amongst the marketing community. You know, I've done a live about this, about the racial inequality amongst marketing agencies, because I always see like a lot of, you know, white entrepreneurs are getting interviewed all the time.
Sure.
Well, the funny thing is, for my marketing agency, I do a white label. So basically, for those who don't know what a white label is, it's basically someone else is selling the product, they're saying it's their own, and my team is doing all the work.
Sure.
So I'm consistently seeing people in like these mastermind groups getting these interviews based off my results. Mm-hmm. And I don't want the credit or anything. I'm fine. I know what role I signed up for. But every time I see the interview and I ask like the group leader, the mastermind leader, like, hey, you know, you see these testimonials from X, Y, and Z that you just interviewed. Do you mind getting me on? You know, maybe so I could drop some gems. Dead silence every single time.
You know, as the guy, everybody wants the credit, man. Nobody's willing to do the work, you know? And so that's why I was so excited to have you on, because I wanted this conversation to be more than just a Facebook post for me and for you, right? For all of us. I think it's one thing to put up a black square on your IG profile and sit and wait. It's another thing to actually be part of the change. And that's why I was so excited. So talk to me, man. Where do you want to take this? I mean, what voice can I help you share? You know, as we're talking about that controversial kneeling for the flag and really what you're seeing now as an entrepreneur, dude, like, I think you have such a unique perspective because, you know, you're a black man that was adopted by a white family.
And my son's white, half white.
But what a beautiful perspective. You know, when this is coming out, dude, we're all humans. Like, we're all people, right? We're brothers and we are human beings with the same human emotions. And I was just like, dude, you have such a beautiful perspective on this. So talk to me, man.
So let's just bring it back to the basic sense. Let's go back to the kneeling. So as in your post, there was controversy from both sides. There was, why didn't you understand, Nick? Or what are you talking about? They're disrespecting the flag. So let's discuss the topic of disrespecting the flag. Colin Kaepernick was never disrespecting the flag. it's he was bringing awareness with his platform by showing like, hey, I'm not going to stand for a flag that doesn't treat everybody equal. What's the saying? Bring your poor, cold, and hungry, you know, whatever the American slogan was. But then when he kneeled to that, I think the biggest issue was it made people realize, like, there's a problem here. But it didn't, they may have realized it, but it was uncomfortable. And when things are uncomfortable, how do we usually retreat? We avoid it or we get angry. So the best headline was, instead of, you know, shedding light on what Colin Kaepernick was really doing and the actual quotes that he said on why he kneeled, the new headlines was Colin Kaepernick disrespecting flag, Colin Kaepernick doesn't care about the U.S. troops. And he specifically quoted, I don't know the exact quote, he was like, I can't stand for a flag where the police and government mistreat people of color and minorities. Mm-hmm. There was not one thing about the military, the troops, you know, the veterans, nothing in there.
You are so spot on, man. You are so spot on. But I think what I found with even the epidemic of corona and what we're seeing now is I think people want the quick, fast headline taken out of context, the quick article to then run away with that, if that makes sense. And so even with that post that I did, you had people respond to that post within 30 seconds without reading words inside of the post, just based on one image, without actually reading my real beliefs on it and responding, actually disagreeing with me when they didn't even take the time to read it. If you actually took the time to understand it and sit down and say, he is a United States citizen as well, why would he feel this way? I spent a lot of time and thought about that, man. Why would you have hundreds of people do that on national television? Why would you have him risk everything in his career, which is exactly what happened, because we all know 4 years ago, I'm a huge football fan, played college and pro football as well. He had the skill set to rock another 2-3 years. Maybe not now. I don't know. Obviously, you can only see so much from the footage. But at the time, he was top 20 quarterbacks in the league, given a starting job, if not even a backup, right? So he risked everything for that to stand for something that he believed in.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. The minute he did that, the way he brought that awareness, my family were big football fans. You know, I'm an Eagles fan, but was an Eagles fan. The minute Colin Kaepernick did that and I started seeing those headlines of how they started making Colin Kaepernick's peaceful protest about the troops rather than what the real agenda was and the real motive was, I stopped watching football. We don't watch football in my house. I don't talk about it. Nothing. And the sport that I loved and I grew up on, because that's all we do every Sunday after the games while all the family's watching the game. All the cousins and friends were outside throwing the football, pretending we're Donovan McNabb or, you know, anybody, you know?
But the thing that I find very interesting is, you know, to me, what that flag represents are those freedoms of voice. And it's a freedom to choose, right? You know, we came over, you know, my family are very, very, very poor folks from Ireland, right? Like we immigrated ourselves, and that gives you that choice, right? Of that freedom. And he's allowed to choose to bring awareness to that voice and how he saw fit, if that makes sense. And I think when you take a step back and understand that, and so let me give you a different perspective on that same exact conversation that you and I had in that post. I said, we're all allowed our own beliefs based on our upbringing, how we were raised, what we have seen with our own two eyes, and those things that have influenced us, right? And so you have a unique perspective, as do I, and everybody was raised differently, right? And so his choice was that. And what I said to your post was, can't he also kneel? And if I was taught to stand for the flag and stand for my grandfathers that served in the wars and stuff, can't I represent what I believe in you at the same time? But can't I also have my hand on your shoulder and unite with you while I'm standing and you're kneeling? You can do that. I can have an opinion. You could have an opinion. And I can show you in unity, I got you, bro. I respect your decision. I'm going to stand with you, but I'm going to stand for what I believe in too. I remember that there was a Pittsburgh Steelers offensive tackle that they were playing. I'm a huge Chicago Bears fan. They were playing in Soldier Field. He was an Iraq veteran. He literally walked out and stood for the anthem. That because it was that big of a deal for him. Doesn't change his beliefs that there is inequality. Doesn't change what's happening in our world right now. Doesn't change that he agrees with his people. His team is allowed to protest their way. He's allowed to stand for what he believes in at the same time. And you can also unite in the middle, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And it's just, but that's where, and I don't want to make this a race thing, you know, putting all white people, all black people into one category. So I'm going to say it like this. I don't understand why is it every time a black person begins to protest peacefully, there's something wrong with it.
Sure.
Martin Luther King protested peacefully. There's a problem with it. Malcolm X did it with violence. You know, there's a problem with it. You know, Colin Kaepernick just kneeled. There's a problem. Now there's Black Lives Matter. People are looting and rioting. Obviously, that is a problem. But that's all of a sudden changes are being made. Why is that every? It's you know what? Actually, let me rephrase it. This is I know the answer. It's like this. There's like the kid that gets bullied in school every day. You're used to him getting bullied, but the minute he stands up for himself and he's punching a kid in the face or punching the bully in the face, everyone's looking at him like, whoa, he's crazy. Why is he acting out like this? Hmm. And that's how I feel the entire world almost looks at the black community. We're expected to play a part. Shut up and throw a football. Shut up and throw a basketball. Shut up and rap. But don't talk politics. Don't talk business. Because the minute you do, you're acting irrational. You're acting a radical. You want equality? Listen. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You can't pull yourself up by the bootstraps when every single time you're pulling yourself up, there's a problem with the way you're pulling it.
Dude, I love your passion right now. You have me on fire, man. But like, I think there is, it's not fair because you have white actors that are very outspoken and they're heroes for it. But a black athlete stands up and it's like, shut up and go dunk a hoop, right? And I couldn't disagree with that concept more. You're allowed to have a voice and your platform should be a voice for the change that you want to see in the world, things that you believe in. We all have different beliefs, but you're at least standing up for something that you believe in at that point, you know?
And it's even, let's reverse the script. Demi Lovato, she's a crackhead. When that happened, oh, let's get her help. Let's, you know, she's going through some things. Lamar Odom gets caught with a couple prostitutes and some crack. All of a sudden, it's like, yo, what is wrong with him? This is at him. The headlines are completely different. We're not playing. It's like we're not even playing on the same field. We're playing the same game with a different set of rules. At what point? What else do we need to do just to have awareness? Do we need to go and loot and destroy multiple small businesses just for people to realize what the hell is going on is so messed up? It goes beyond Colin Kaepernick because he's not even a leader of this movement. It goes to Jay-Z. Jay-Z, the stuff that he does, it's never good enough. Jay-Z donates $1 million, $2 million to schools. LeBron James builds an entirely public school, privately funded for a lower income community. He didn't invest enough money. But, you know, I don't want to say whatever, you know, when Target makes a post or Call of Duty post, Black Lives Matter, they're the best damn thing in the world now. But what you see, it's I don't know why it is. I think that the world is so conditioned that black men and women are second class citizens. No matter what we do, there will always be an issue. There's only one change that will ever allow us to become first class citizens. We have to work within our own community and build our own community up first, because there is a lot of problems within the black community that we do not need the input of outside communities inputting on the community. And we need to start doing business for ourselves, you know, because at the end of the day, I don't even think that people actually hate black people. I know this may sound crazy. Listen to my theory on this. I think people just look at black people as financially, we're just poor. And when you look at a poor person by default, you already think of them as something else. It's kind of when you look at a person in a jail suit, picking up garbage. That person could be in jail for unpaid parking tickets. But the first thing that goes to your mind is, oh, he's a murderer. You see what I'm saying? Like, how dude, quick, how it's, oh, man. I
am freaking so honored you came on, man, because, you know, I think anybody listening right now can feel your heart and passion coming through and just really, really where you're at, right? You know, if I could take anything from what you said, listen, you want to be the change, let's freaking make our own changes, right? Let's control our own destiny. So where I think that's cool for you is you're not just saying that. You're actually walking the talk. So talk to me about that, man. So you are, dude, you've been on your own since you were 16 years old, right? So you freaking, dude, you pulled your own self up from your bootstraps. So, you know, listening, we do have a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of real estate professionals, a lot of achievers out there trying to do more, be more, have more. Talk to me about that. What was your mindset? You own your own business, man. You're a self-made man. Talk to me about that.
So I was in foster care. My biological mom's she's a heroin addict. And my biological dad in and out of prison my entire life. You know, typical black man story. You know, I guess that's what they call it nowadays. So I was in foster care until I was about 8 years old. Got adopted when I was 10. And that's when I got adopted into a Jewish family. You know, my adopted mom's actually Dominican, but we weren't really close with her family. So all I knew was my dad's side of the family, my adopted dad's side. And, you know, Jewishes can get, you know, actually, I don't usually tell people this. My grandmother, she's actually like a really well-known psychologist in America. My grandfather, he was actually heavily involved in politics back in the 70s, you know, making all those decisions and involved in a lot of, I don't want to say scandals, but he got caught up in some stuff as well. And yeah, and then I live with my dad. My dad was kind of like you, actually, because my grandparents are racist. You know, they're like 100%, they don't like black people. So, which is weird, but they love me. Well, I don't get it. So that's what I'm saying. I don't think people are racist. I just think they have something in their head where they choose not to like someone, you know? So, yeah. So, you know, my dad was actually, he traded stocks and he was a fireman. He was in 9/11, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, so he made it. He was actually, he heard about the planes crashing on his day off. He drove to New York City because we lived about 30 minutes from New York. Drove to New York City, parked his car on the highway and started running down the highway. My dad used to run track at Penn State, so running was never an issue. And he's running, putting his fire gear on. You know, he went to a lot of funerals over those next few months.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, basically, let's just say, you know, he PTSD kicked in. My dad, like, he had like, a lot of emotional, mental issues. He, like, sleep with a knife under his pillow. The windows were always locked because he thought terrorists were going to come and bomb us or whatever it may be. But he's a good man. He always told me, hard work, this, that, and the other. He says, Kyrie, one day I won't be here to take care of you. Well, you know, he's like, I look at you as my son, but the world out there are always going to look at you as a black man. And unfortunately, you being a black man is basically you being a criminal by default until proven otherwise.
Wow, dude.
And
how old were you when you heard those words?
Those talks probably started happening around 12, 13.
What a great gift he started shaping you as a young man.
I never knew what he was doing. I just thought they were rants he were going on. I was like, okay, yeah. Shut up. Like, yeah. Because I didn't recognize, because we lived in a small town as well called Brewster, New York. And it's like 30 minutes from Yonkers, and I never noticed the racism that was there. Wow. Like, my dad called the police because someone spray painted the N-word, the hard R, on our driveway. And the police were just like very nonchalant. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll see what we can do about it. We'll definitely look around and keep an eye out.
They legit spray painted that on your driveway for you.
Yeah.
Wow. So you've seen some stuff growing up.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That the racism is the easiest stuff I've seen. When you have a mom that's a crackhead, you see a lot worse things.
Sure.
But, so yeah. Well, basically, you know, our brother, he just got out of prison about a year and a half ago. So when I was like 12, 13, my dad was like, hey, you know, let's just move to Israel. My dad's Jewish. And I was like, all right, cool. Let's make it happen. So we moved to Israel. My brother was here because the state took him away. Because my brother's really reckless. He's 2 years older than I am. He's a good dude now. He's learned his lesson after his 7-year bid in prison. So, yeah, we moved to Israel. And then from there, it was like, I got thrown into boarding school. I did a lot of stupid stuff. I really like stealing. So I always used to steal money. I just always loved money. I didn't love money for money. I love money because
You were hustling early, man, is what you were saying.
Exactly. Because I knew that money was the way to make sure I never had to go back into foster care again.
Wow.
So it was a subconscious thing that I was doing. I never got a thrill out of it. It felt like safety when I had money.
It was a necessity. It was a basic human need for you to stay alive. I understand. I can respect that.
100%. So I went to boarding school. In boarding school, we have all races, Russians, because in Israel, everyone from all countries, they all come in there. So in that place, you know, they come from like really humble beginnings. No money, nothing, bad environments, drug addict parents and everything. So it was all love and it was all family there. A lot of fighting, but there's teenager stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go to boarding school for 3 years. I learn Hebrew. I'm very fluent in Hebrew, by the way. That's how I got my first real estate job. So Learn Hebrew. My brother gets out of rehab. And because he was in a rehab for about a couple years, but then the state was like, listen, and my parents were divorced at this time, adopted mom, adopted dad. So my mom was in New Jersey. Me and my dad were in Israel. So they call my adopted mom and says, listen, your son's out of control. We cannot, either you pick him up or we're just sending him to jail until he's 18, basically. And she's like, all right, I'll be right there. She hopped on the plane, picked him up. And this is when Facebook started bubbling up. I'll probably say around 2008, 2009 now we're in. And my brother messaged me. Because me and my brother would talk like once every 6 months. Because, you know, it wasn't easy access to Wi-Fi back in the early 2000s. So then he messaged me. He's like, hey, I'm with mom. Well, you know, I haven't spoken to my mom in years. Because my dad, once that divorce happened, it was a messy divorce. I haven't spoken to her. My brother was like, yeah, I'm here, this, that, and the other. Why don't you come down to Jersey? And I was like, and that's my brother. Me and my brother went through every foster home, group home together. So I was like, by any means necessary, I am my brother's keeper. So I tell my dad. My dad begs me not to go. And, you know, we get into this huge argument in the middle of my boarding school. I don't really want to discuss what the argument was, but he eventually said, you know, all right, I'm going to let you go. So December 30th, 2009, I'm on a plane to Jersey. I land December 31st at 11 p.m. And then 2010 happens. I'm living in Jersey. So from there, my brother's getting in trouble, committing crimes, drugs, all that stuff. It's just what he's used to. And then my brother eventually gets arrested and they kick him out. Then he gets arrested. Now it's me and my mom and her husband. And I don't know. And my mom's going through not foster care. She's going through foreclosure. Financial problems are hard.
This is 2010 and the market crash.
Yeah, exactly. So we were definitely impacted. And that's when my mom she started taking out her frustrations on me. She was always like, oh, you're just like your dad, this, that, and the other. My mom, my biological mom, my adopted mom, she's an alcoholic. So, yeah. So she was.
Bro, you have battled so much adversity in your life. The respect that I have for you, and I think our listeners at this point, you've battled, bro. To talk about a self-made man, you are a self-made man.
Had to, man. It was. There was nothing to lose at the end of the day. So yeah, she kicked me out. I live with my best friend on my best friend's couch. His name is Vinny. Still my best friend to this day. His parents let me sleep on their couch in the basement for 2 years. And then once I was 18, I could have stayed with them. It would have been fine. Mm. But I didn't agree with what they were saying. They're like, go to school, get a job. And I was always against it. I was like, these people can't teach me anything. You know, I was like, my life, I want to be rich. I didn't know anything about wealth. I was like, I just know I want to make money. And I knew that a 9-to-5 was not it. So I moved in with my best friend, Shandon. He actually works for me now. All my clients love him. And we were just throwing parties. We were like, yo, let's just throw parties to make money. So that's what we did. And, you know, I was DJing as well. And we were just turning up New Jersey. Everywhere we went, clubs, they all loved us. But it was too much partying and not enough business.
I got you. Yeah.
So basically from there, let's just fast forward a few years. I meet my son's mom, my girlfriend that I have now. And I start settling down a little bit more. I'm like, let me just chill. And I was like, you know what? Let me go to one more party. Because my friend invited me out to this Fortune Builders event. And I was like, bro, I have nothing to do with real estate. I don't want to go, but I'll go. So he had a 3-day pass. I didn't go to any of them. So I'm on Facebook scrolling one day. And I see like this dope free rooftop real estate networking event party in Manhattan. I was like, yo, Alfonso, this is more my type of vibe. Let's go to here. And it's real estate, so I can make up for it.
You're like, I know how to socialize, man. I can party. You're like, I'll shake some hands, kiss some babies. I'm in.
Exactly. So he was like, you know what? He was like, let's go. So we went. And once we actually went there, no one wanted to talk to us. Because I was a landscaper at the time. You know, settled down. Basically, living the married life. I took a chill pill. But it wasn't really working out for me. So, the landscaping, not the married life. So, we went there. No one wanted to talk to us. Every time I told them I was a landscaper, they would just like laugh at us. So I was like, listen, man, let's just get a beer and let's sit down. So I buy me and my friend Alfonso some beers. We're sitting and I hear three people sitting speaking Hebrew. And I told you I speak Hebrew. So I was like, oh, when I hear Hebrew, I just vibe. You know, it's just like we just start talking. So I heard it. I turned around and tapped the dude on the shoulder, started speaking Hebrew. He looked at me like, what the hell? And he's like, yo, I got to hear this. So we start talking and everything. And then that guy, his name is Nick. Funny coincidence.
Good name. Nick, I like this guy already. Tell me more about Nick.
So the funny thing is, so Nick is like, listen, I'm going to buy us all the drinks. And Nick is sitting there with two guys, his attorney and one of his friends. And his attorney says, Kyrie, I don't think you know who you're talking to, but this is one of the biggest investors in New York City right now. He owns nearly, he owns over 100 multifamilies in Brooklyn. And I was like, I don't know. Okay. Like, great. He's like, he's probably going to ask you if you want to work for him. Make sure you take that job. And I was just like, yeah. I was like, word. Yeah, no problem. That was landscape. I was like, once again, sure. I don't care about real estate. So Nick comes back and he's just like, yeah, this is what I do. He offered me a job. He didn't offer my friend a job, but I'm a loyal type of guy. So I was like, if I come, my man's got to come with me.
Yeah.
You know, if I got a dollar, my man's got a dollar too. That's just the way I live my life. Well, not now. I'm a little bit more, I'm cheaper now, but, so we do it. I call up his partner, Sean. Sean was 25 at the time. You know, he's making a couple million dollars a year. And we interview and all that. He's like, yeah, the commission's $10,000 per deal. So we're basically door knocking. We're bird dogging, but with a $10,000 commission. It's Brooklyn real estate. So, you know, $10,000 isn't much.
Sure.
So I was like, cool. So we started doing that. We were going to Brooklyn every day. I had no money. They weren't paying for anything. But eventually I was like, hey, guys, listen, I don't have any money. I can't keep affording to pay the $15 toll. And then from there, you know, they're like, okay, we'll give you a car and we'll pay the toll. Just stick with us.
Just keep knocking.
Exactly. So they did that. And then I closed three deals with them. And, you know, but I didn't get the full $10,000 because they deducted everything from the back end.
For like $15 and that $399 a month lease added up. I got you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but it was the knowledge that I really appreciated. So from there, I was like, you know what? Let me go do my own thing in Jersey. So I did my own thing in Jersey. Because once you, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere, right? So from there, I was like, all right, this is real estate. I don't know how to run a business, but I do know how to do real estate somewhere. So I started wholesaling and I was doing deals. I linked up with a couple people and we're just going to fast forward. I found out I'm having a son. I'm 23 years old now. And find out I'm having a son. Me and my girlfriend were living in a basement, paying $900 a month to live in a basement. There's like lizards running down on the floor and everything. It was disgusting. It was clean. It was nice. It was, I don't know why there was lizards there, you know. But so, yeah, so that happens. You know, there's no AC. It's summer. We find out we're having a child. And I'm just like, we're going to have this child. And then, you know, and there was this one deal I've been waiting on for the last year to close. About 2 months later, I find in like June, they're like, hey, Kyrie, the short sale is it's finally done. You're all good. You're going to be getting your commission check, this, that, and the other. You know, I was licensed at the time. So, yeah, the deal was done. And it was a $32,000 check.
Wow.
I've never seen that. The biggest check I've ever seen was like $2,000 in my life. So from that moment on, I was like, real estate's a gateway out of poverty. And it doesn't matter who you are.
Let me ask you, with all the blood, sweat, and tears, and the patience is what I really hear with you, and that stick-to-itiveness, right? Is so many people give up on their goals and dreams. You know, it's like you go eat a salad and go run and you don't have a six pack. You're just going to quit the gym and blame the trainer, right? Or, you know, you did a little Instagram post and you went live and you're not rich. You know, people, I swear to people just walk around with like a wheelbarrow waiting for money to fall out of the sky. And they're just wondering why it doesn't just float down into their house. You know, why can't I sit on the couch? I want it, Kyrie. I read quotes. I follow Nick on Instagram. Where's my money, man? And I always say you can't outsource your pushups. So I'd love to dig in. What did that mean to you after all that time of not giving up faith, not giving up on yourself, man?
It was, I think I did give up on myself, to be honest. But I think once I found out I was having a child, it gave me life again.
Mm. A purpose, and something to drive you more.
Exactly. So it really made me realize, like, you know, I can't say I've given up on myself. Let me not even say that. I believed in myself, but it was when you catch so many L's consistently, it's like, how do you keep pushing forward? When it's like, how many times can your girlfriend spot the rent? How many bowls of ramen noodles can you eat every single day? Like, when's enough enough? When do you just give up? And honestly, I was like, listen, no matter what, I still have to live this life. I still have to live regardless.
Wow.
So am I 24 hours going to be the same for the next 60 years? So am I going to go do a 9-to-5 or am I going to go bust my ass for the next couple of years and keep living this way? Because I'm already used to being broke. Like, I've gotten used to the life. It's been, my whole life has been nothing but struggle. So there was no difference now. You know, I didn't need anything, well, except Grant Cardone. I was listening to a lot of Grant Cardone. I was just listening to Grant Cardone, and I would just keep going, keep trying stuff, you know, and that was it. And I was like, something's going to click, but I have to do one thing consistently rather than try to do one push-up and hope for the amazing, perfectly square chest, you know? Dude,
I respect you so much and admire you, dude. Is, you know, if you look at any successful entrepreneur, you'll see them today and you'll see their profile, or you'll see, you know, the where their level of success is. But so many people want to see that and want the filters and the angles and the photos outside of the jet pulling up in the Bentley. They don't want to see the 10, 15, 20 years of L's, of getting punched in the face. Dude, I've had more right hooks that knocked me to the canvas than I think you could ever dream of, right? And I think it's your ability to push through those. Because if it were easy, everybody would be skinny, rich, and happy, flying around in private jets and helicopters. It's not that easy. But if you can stick to it and have that faith, and really what I found as you've been talking is finding something that pulls and drives you. Here at the Triumphant Life Carrier, we call them fire goals. There's a goal in your heart and soul that you are just on fire for. For you, it was finding out that your baby boy was going to be born. And when you tap into some sort of a drive like that, you're tapped into a whole nother level of commitment, right? It's huge, man. Huge.
And actually, me and my friend Shandon, we have a saying that we always said, even at 18, like, we would try to get girls, it would never work out sometimes. So, but we are so big on our egos, we are like, we were like, hey, listen, we didn't. This is not a loss. This is just a postponed win. That was it.
This is not a loss. This is a postponed win.
That's it.
Dude, preach it, man. You are dropping so much love, insight, inspiration on this episode, man. I mean, we started with a controversial Facebook post and it led to really your adversity that you've overcome in your life, man. And it's funny because everybody has that type of a story. You know, if you look at all of our lives, most people that are successes today have faced some sort of an adversity, whether that's in life, in business, and it's that ability to push through and get where you're at today, man. So any big takeaways that you've found in your life as an entrepreneur that, you know, somebody listening right now, they're seeking that, right? Right now, they're trying to get one step closer in that fitness goal, in that income goal. Maybe they want to start that side hustle. Talk to that person right now. So if you're listening, guys, Kyrie's going to drop you some nuggets right now. Turn it up. Get a notepad ready. What would you just share to that person? Or you at 16, man? If you could go back and talk to you at 16, 18, and where you're at now, what would you say to that person?
See, I'm going to say if I can go back and talk to myself, because I don't know everyone's situation. You know, I don't know where they are. But if I was 16 again, about to go back out on my own and not even know, you know, how to, where I'm going to live or anything like that, no car, no license, nothing, I would say, Kyrie, stick, if you're, depending on your age, so let's just say, Kyrie, you're 16, try everything. Just try multiple things for 2-3 years. It's okay. Try a new job. Try this. Try a new girl. Try a new place to travel. Try everything, but make sure while you're doing this, you're taking notes and you're gaining real experiences for you to use later, you know, and that's it. You know, so like when business, I was a car salesman, I did door-to-door sales selling cleaning products. I work for Hard Money Banks as a loan officer. I've done it all. I delivered pizzas, and it's crazy because I look at all this stuff, right? And I'm just thinking like, well, how it made me who I am. When I delivered pizzas, I knew I wanted an extra tip, so I knew I had to deliver that pizza with a smile. Right when I showed up, I would make the most tips as a delivery driver because I would text the owner when I'm about to come with their order, be like, hey, listen, I'm 20 minutes out. See you soon. Just wanted to give you the heads up. And then when I'm 5 minutes away, I'm like, hey, I'm 5 minutes away. See you soon. And I was doing this before Grubhub and all that stuff. So, and when I got
there, you were your own automation at that time.
Exactly.
Analog automation.
So, and that taught me customer service. When I was doing hard money loans, it didn't teach me about real estate. It taught me about that these investors just have a system. They're doing the same thing over. They're buying the same properties over and over again. And on top of it, they're living the same 24 hours that we're living. but they're making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 profit on deals by putting in a painful amount of work for 3 months. And then they're doing it again. And then they're building teams. So I was like, okay, so this is a company structure. So I got customer service. Now I got the company. Now it's car sales. Car sales is very personable. And I'm like talking to people. You see people with bad credit, but you learn not to judge that person with bad credit because they may not be coming in there trying to buy their Mercedes. Maybe they're coming in there because they understand they need to fix their credit. They know they're going to have a high interest rate, but they understand the long-term goal is this. So rather than judging them based off their finances, let's not judge at all. Let's just hear their story out. And when you start mixing that stuff together, I would have never learned any of this stuff if I didn't try everything first and then hone in. Because real estate turned into be all of that. Any business, once you're a business owner, you're going to wear every hat in the beginning until you have that foundation built out and you're established. So once again, when I was getting fired and quitting these jobs, they weren't losses. They're postponed wins.
Man, I'm learning so much just listening to you and your passion and really just your faith in yourself to just keep showing up. You know, you mentioned, you know, 18 different industries and they were all just shaping you into the man that you are, you know? And so if you're listening right now and you're not where you want to be, I hope that Kyrie just inspires you to keep pushing, just keep going. You know, we all have greatness inside of us, regardless of our backgrounds, upbringing, you know, what you've been through. And I mean, Kyrie, you're living proof that, dude, you've been in the foster care system. You know, you've been on your own since you were 16. The emotions, going to Israel, kicked out of boarding school, and fought through all of that adversity. You know, and guys, if Kyrie can do it, I mean, I really hope that sparks some faith in yourself to just keep pushing, man. Kyrie, you got a beautiful story. I'm freaking honored you're here, man. So what started this podcast episode was, you know, back to my post of Colin Kaepernick on Facebook. You know, and Kyrie, I want to finish with this. I promised you an outlet to have a voice, man. We're listening. What would you like to say? Just uncut, man. The microphone is yours. What would you like to say to have a voice with, you know, your past, your story, you know, the way you see the world, what you see going on right now, man? The platform's yours.
All right, excellent. So I really think that this is for all colors and nationalities, but first, I think first things first, this is probably going to affect, you're going to be, a lot of people will be triggered by this. You guys need to stop. And when I say you guys, I mean every person that's trying to do bad, you know, do against movements. You guys need to stop with the LGBTQ. You need to stop with the trans lives matters. We need to deal with Black Lives Matters first, period. And it's not because any of those other things do not face any type of adversities, but the Black man, we're not even going to get into the woman yet, but the Black man has been stripped from his children, taken from the household. They took us out of our own communities. They burned down Black Wall Street. We have faced every single trial and error. And every time we speak up, there's a new group popping up. For example, now it's trans Black Lives Matters. Can we just get through the Black Lives Matters first already? Let's just handle that one. We need everybody else to wait in line. Because every single day when we wake up, at the end of the day, no matter what, if you're gay or this or transsexual, you get to hide that. No matter, it may not be right, but you get to hide it. When I walk out of my door, I do not get to hide being Black. It's not going to happen. Every morning I wake up, and I'm a very spiritual person, so I don't believe that anything bad will happen in my universe, but there is always an everlasting fear that I will be killed when I leave. My girlfriend has to face that reality that I will be pulled over, killed, abused, beaten by somebody, or someone's going to frame me for something I didn't do. It's going to be a reality my son's going to have to live with until the people change. Now I have to think about my son's 2 years old. Everyone thinks he's cute and amazing until he turns 13 and everyone looks at him a certain way now. We need to deal with this situation we have right now, and we need to stop protesting whenever a Black person takes a stand because they're frustrated, angry, and people need to stop telling the Black community to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, because we cannot do it without the support of everybody else. We cannot do it if every time we talk about this, it's an uncomfortable conversation that nobody wants to move forward with. We cannot do it if Black people within our own community don't stop harming each other. because we all love to point the finger saying it's the white man keeping us down. But at the end of the day, you're paying $1,800 of rent in New Jersey to live in the hood when you could come right on down to Texas and move to Dallas and go do a rent to own for 2 or 3 years and then have the bank buy out the FHA loan. Now you own that property and now you have some real ownership. At what point are we going to stop blaming what white people are doing and do for ourselves? That's the thing. At what point is it over? So give us our platform. Thank you to everybody that gave us 6 days to completely ruin small businesses and they didn't hear our cries and outrages beforehand. And now that this is now dying out, you guys want to make us look like, I say you guys, the media, want to portray us as animals again. Donald Trump wants to say these terrible things about the mayor of Washington, D.C. because she spray painted Black Lives Matter on whatever the president's street is and calling her unprofessional on this and that she's an animal. Like, that needs to stop. Like, it's like every single time a black person does something, people want to get involved because it's cool. Now that things dying out, I have not seen a single post about what's going on. I don't see the news outlets. What change has happened? Change is not going to happen. Great, we protested, we looted, we rioted, we have brought awareness. The next step is now ownership if we want to bring change. And that's not coming from anybody but us.
I love it, man. I'm so happy you came on to share your take on the world, your take on your life and your mission, man, and your movement, because I agree with you on that one. I feel that the world that we live in, we do things so short-sighted, real quick, for a quick fix to make ourselves feel good. It's like going to church for 30 minutes, praying, singing hallelujah, and then you get in the church parking lot and you're flipping off people and honking at them. What good did that cause, right? Exactly. You know, I really do believe in the "be the change we want to see in the world" quote. I really strongly do. And I think change starts with us personally inside and the actions that you take for yourself, for your family, and in your own home, in your own household, because the ripple effect of that will grow outside of you, if that makes sense. You want to make a change, change yourself, change everything around you. That's how change happens. You did that yourself, you know? And I think making it aware, that's why I wanted to have you on. You know, at the Triumph Life Companies, man, I don't need to come out and do some long-ass post, "We stand with Black Lives." No, I'm going to freaking have you on and say it. Hey, I got you. You know, you might be kneeling for the flag. My hand is on your shoulder right now saying, "I got you, bro." I might stand for the anthem with my hand over my heart. It has no difference that I'm holding onto your shoulder saying, "I got you. We're in this together." And so I'm just so honored you came on, man. I just shared your heart and soul. As anybody listening can tell, you didn't hold a damn thing back, brother. I respect the hell out of you for that. So
I appreciate it. I really do. I'm glad you gave me the chance to even speak about this, because most people get really uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable stuff, and everyone could do a small part. Just don't judge before someone opens their mouth.
Yeah, and I think, like you had said, keep it on the issue at hand. You know, I want to finish with this. So many people started with the Black Lives Matter movement, and then, well, what about all lives? What about pink lives, purple lives? What about Korean lives, Hispanic lives? And I understand all of that, but I heard the best analogy for that was, that's like going to somebody that just beat breast cancer and saying, "Congratulations, we're on a breast cancer walk," or "a breast cancer survivor." Well, what about prostate cancer? Why are you leaving prostate cancer out of it? We never said that. We're celebrating and uniting for this one cause. We never mentioned no other cause didn't matter. We're talking about this cause today. And I couldn't agree with that concept so much more, man. So,
and I do want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
I have no issue with police. I want to clarify that now. Never have, never will. I believe there's good and bad everywhere. But the thing is, there are some jobs you cannot have bad. Are you gonna go on Delta Airlines if you find out there's a bad pilot? I'm not.
You're not gonna want to.
You're gonna go to a bad doctor or a dentist? No. So why are they allowing bad police? You know, I think the police cult-like mentality needs to come to an end, because blue lives do matter. Defunding the police is not the answer. Holding people accountable for the crimes they commit is.
There you go.
And that's it. I don't even think I need to go anymore, because I think that point, my point was said there.
Kyrie, you know what we call that? We're going to call that a mic drop, bro. Do you want to reach out and drop it for me, though? If you're listening, Kyrie just mic dropped you. If you're watching him, you just saw him mic drop you. Anyway, guys, Kyrie, I can't thank you enough for coming on, man. I'm just truly honored that we're here, and I really hope that our listeners got something out of it.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. I appreciate it.